Blog Talk Radio.
Guys, my brother say Bo, say Howard.
Yeah. No nickname tonight.
I'm trying. That's making notes for myself.
Well, Carly's the one we got to watch. Mm-hmm. Your language.
All right, this is PG. G, right it.
I'm on my P's and Q's tonight, my good behavior.
Can you hear Layla? Can you hear Layla? Okay.
I can.
Sorry.
Layla is my grandbaby who is also part of the club.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to ask, I think one of the kickoff questions asked about the relationship between the people on the screen and then the other family members.
Yeah. She has her little portfolio.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. We went live a minute. Aretha, we went live a minute ago, right, Aretha?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, so I don't need y'all to just give me 1 second. We're going live on Facebook. Just give me a second, and I need everybody to smile because we're going live. Hi, welcome to my investing story. My name is Ann McMillan. I am the master wealth builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life and business. Coming to you again with another powerful, powerful, awesome, exciting show. A little different this time because today on my investing story, my co-host Iona McNeil, the baby billionaire, and myself, who are volunteers with Better Investing, we will be sharing with you one of our first highlighted investment clubs. But before we do that, we'd like to share with you a little bit about the organization Better Investing. Like I said, we're volunteers with Better Investing, and Better Investing is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. Better Investing has helped over 5 million individual investors learn how and why to invest in individual stocks. We're not day traders. We're not money managers. We're not investment advisors. We're simply, we are volunteers. And actually, all of us tonight are volunteers with Better Investing in one way or another, and we are also all involved in an investment club. So this is going to be one of the very exciting shows we've ever hosted because tonight we get a chance to go live and share with you I really want to say the good, bad, and the ugly of an investment club. But at the bottom line, at the end of the day, it is profitable. Profitable for the family, profitable for your finances, and also profitable for your mindset because it gives you a peace of mind knowing that you are investing and leaving a legacy. So with that, let me introduce my awesome co-host, Miss Ione McNeil. Good afternoon, Ione. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Let us share with our listeners a little bit about the proper name for the club is Wealth Builders Investment Group. And Wealth Builders Investment Group is composed of multi-generational family members joined together with a twofold cause to assist enhancing investment knowledge for current and future retirement and to build the skill level and knowledge of the next generation for wealth building. The club is primarily comprised of parents, their offspring, and their children, with the ongoing teaching and building for educational purposes, skills and preparation for the next generation. So with that, Ayuna, we can go ahead and get started and introduce our special guest and get into the conversation.
Well, welcome, everybody. Welcome to the four members of the Wealth Builders Investment Club. I do just want to promote my shirt. I'm building generational wealth. So that's a shout out to your club and to, Gerald Grant III, who was on our show a few weeks ago. And he and his father are both financial advisors. And, you know, just passing on that generational wealth of investment education and financial knowledge. So a quick introduction of the people in the wealth building group that we're going to be speaking with tonight. We have Howard Johnson, we have Carl Johnson, we have Cynthia McCrary, and we have Tiffany Thomas. So I'm going to ask Ms. McCrary, she's not going to speak a lot tonight, but just to kick us off, explain the relationship between the four people on right now and give us an overview of all of your family members that are in the club, because right now you're part of a family investment club, but, you know, we want to understand the dynamics and the personalities that's in the club.
Okay. Thank you, Iona, and it's a pleasure to be with you all this evening. We are, as you've indicated, a family club. And in order to be in our club, you have to be related to someone else in the club, either by marriage or birthright. And it's not restricted to whether you're male or female or which generation you belong to. It actually started, believe it or not, with Carl, who is the brother of Howard. And, his sons were constantly asking us, Howard and I, you all have been investing for a while. When are you going to teach us? When are you going to teach us? So that's how the club started. Howard took it upon himself and asked me would I go along and assist with starting the club. We're actually in January, we will be have been operating 6 years. So we had a 5-year anniversary last year. So we had a parent, the mother-in-law of Howard Johnson, who is a retiree, and she is, I think, currently about 80 years old, but she's had to withdraw in the last year or two. Then there is, Carl has another brother in California who is an MD, and he is now the president of the club. There is, Tiffany Thomas is my daughter, who has gone on many trips to the various country fairs and Congress is what it was called back then to attend these sessions, just as you had, Ione. And also from that point, Howard has sons that are part of the program, of the club, and his wife. Carl has his wife and his sister-in-law is part of the club, and my daughter, her husband. And believe it or not, I have a 7-year-old grandbaby that has to stick her head in at every meeting to say hello and speak to everybody. But that is how the club is, combined, how it's composed of. And we're all actually blood related.
That's wonderful. Can I guess about 15 in the group?
We have right now, I believe, is 11 active and about 5 what we call inactive. They pay dues and all, but they're not actually participating in the decision. And that was part of our makeup. I think it became, and this is something that we've always talked about, how do we retain people involved in learning about investing and to understand the final payoff. It takes a little work up front, but it becomes easier down the road, and you will appreciate it. So, and I think they kind of fell by the wayside because of life. You know, everybody has things going on in their lives and all, but they still wanted to stay connected Family Club.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking, I'm so glad that you all are the first investment club we're talking to, because despite, you know, the good, bad, and early we kind of talked about before we hit the live record button, you know, I think you all are fundamentally sound just by being a part of Better Investing. And I'm aware of a lot of people, individuals that find Better Investing and they want to go and tell everybody, and they, you know, they hear about investment club, or, oh, I need to start a family club. But to go from I need and want to start a family club to put all of my family on to that club, I mean, the family may not really be up to it. So talk to us a little bit about, and especially Carl, speak to me about what made you decide to approach your brother, Howard. You know, granted, it took Cynthia to more than 2 years to talk to him to come along. What was the wake-up call for you to ask your brother for help and wanting to start a family club?
You know, I guess I was familiar with what Cynthia was doing. Cynthia really initiated everything. She was involved with investing for at least 20 years. And when you sit down and think about it, if you want to accumulate wealth, I think that's what all our objectives is. You got to have some type of investment strategy. I think with the younger generation, they want instant gratification. They want to invest $100 and get $250 back next week. And from an investment standpoint, it takes, you know, quite a bit of time from that. I started realizing that Cynthia brought Howard into the program. And it, after a period of time, I kept asking him, well, why do you keep going to these conferences and these meetings and things? And he told me it was about better investment. So just to be honest, after a period of time, I think everybody want to accumulate wealth. So I started asking him about it, and he saw I was interested in it. And then he started encouraging me to come on and join. And just like the younger generation, I resisted it. You know, I didn't want to go to those meetings and spend the time and the due diligence it really takes to get the benefits, to reap the benefits from the program. So he basically just stayed on me. He hired me. He kind of like encouraged me really to participate. And it's just like we said before we got started. And once you get a taste of it, you want more and more and more, especially when you start accumulating resources and see how those resources join. One of the primary things I had that come to, and Cynthia put that in my head, you got to have a consistent plan for saving. No matter what's going on in life, you really got to put away X number of dollars or a certain percentage of your money over a time period. And one of the other things that Howard introduced me to was that in better investment, I don't think you get rich in better investment. Better investment gives you the tools that you need to learn how to invest. But then you take your own money on the side and you start doing some of the things, you start emulating some of the things that the Better Investment Club does. And between that and what you do in as a group as a whole, that helps accumulate wealth. So that's how I got started, but I'm really thankful to Cynthia and Howard for being meticulous about getting us involved and getting my sons involved and getting the whole family involved, because it's not a selfish thing. You want the whole family to accumulate wealth, and it's been like 6 years, and I'm very surprised and very pleased where, as a group, where we've got to from a financial standpoint.
Excellent. And I'm going to ask one more question of you, Carl, before I ask you, Tiffany. But thinking back to, you know, like you said, you know, you reached out to Howard, but you also had been watching Cynthia for a while. Was there a personal moment in your life that really caused you to go from, man, I don't want to hear that, to, let me check this out? You know, because to me, I think that a lot of people that I've come across or talked to, especially if they haven't been exposed to investing early, a lot of times they tried a lot of other ways and it didn't work, or they found out that wasn't them, whether it be real estate, whether it be entrepreneurship. And, you know, they kind of take the long route to get to better investing, stock investing, having a long-term approach, and being okay with not making money quick.
To be honest, Cynthia, and she probably don't recall it, but we had a financial workshop at the church because we go to the same church. And we were sitting there and we were talking one day. And I was, you know, I was telling about what was going on in my life, and she's telling me what was going on with her. And she told me to get started, you really just need to save $1,000. And she said, you save $1,000, that's what gives you the foundation to do a lot of things that you want to do. That was the inspirational point, and it made a big difference in my life as far as being comfortable. I don't think you never have enough money in life. You just don't have enough money. You're just ongoing. It's insatiable. But that gave me the motivation to say that once you get there and you start a regular savings program, it changed my whole life. Because just like the younger generation, I had those dreams of just getting right. I want quick results. I want to get rich real quick. And I realized that that wasn't going to happen. And then once you get started and you see the benefits and you start learning things, and it's not anything new. I mean, this game's been around a long time. We just been introduced to it. And once you get the hold of it and you start looking at that balance that's in that account, you go, well, this is not bad right here, you know? And then the market dropped, and you go, oh, what happened? I almost cussed, but I did.
But so did you say, oh, what happened? Let me buy more?
No. You like, what I got myself into?
Yeah. And I called Howard and Dave. I said, what happened in the market, Dave? But, you know, he said, be patient. Just be patient and ride it out. And the market drop, that's the time to buy. You know, you don't panic. You buy when the market drops. Those kind of things that you learn that makes it very comfortable. But once again, it was Howard and Cynthia. They're the backbone of our club. They got a lot of user experience, and you know, we kind of run things through them. Even though they try to make us independent, there's no substitute for the knowledge and the dedication and commitment they give, because the more seminars, the more knowledge you get, the more powerful you become.
Wow, and I think that's amazing to be able to have that type of resource that you can trust, that's blood.
Right, right. And you do trust them more because they are blood. You know what I'm saying? You really do. You really do.
Well, thank you for that, Carl, because I don't think I realized how important saving was. You know, for some people to get started even in investing, you just kind of have to start that savings goal.
Right.
So that you could actually see wealth creation. And then, you know, that's kind of the bridge to help you even mentally and emotionally get ready to invest, even if it's on a small scale.
Right. I think when it comes to saving, my mindset was you save for emergencies, you know, for your car breakdown or your water heater need to be repaired or things like that. But I went in the mindset that you have to put money up just to save, just to accumulate wealth. And like I said earlier, once you start accumulating and see the returns and dividends being paid and things like that and the stock splits, it makes a lot of difference in that balance sheet, for your personal balance sheet.
Ione, I'm curious, how old were you when that realization kicked in? Because I think there are a lot of people that would be listening to this podcast will think, you know, oh, well, I'm too old. It's not, you know, it's you know, it's not time. It's too late for me.
It was last week.
You know, remember that people are listening to this as a podcast. They can't see you and gray on your face when you say
okay.
You got to get your number.
Okay. It was about seven, eight years ago.
Can I interrupt this? Because I'm telling y'all the truth. He came kicking and fighting. He did not want to participate. But it made my heart just dance. A couple of months ago, Carl made this one statement. He said, you know, I'm beginning to understand. All of this you're teaching me, I understand it now about the SSD and how to pick good quality stocks and all of that. He said, it's a lot to learn, but now I understand. And that did my heart good. Because remember I asked you, Carl, can you repeat that again?
Yes, you did. You really did. Mm-hmm. And it is coming together, too, and I'm thankful for that. I really am. Mm-hmm. But it was about 7-8 years ago when we had that conversation in the church, and,
yeah.
And from that standpoint, it went on. Because.
But how old were you?
Okay, I'm 67 now. I was probably about, I'd say about 58, 59, something.
See, that's very important because we have people watching and listening
mm-hmm.
who are in their 40s saying it's too late. And actually, you're now telling us, you Howard told us last time, I think Howard said he was 40-something.
Yeah,
49.
Wow.
And you started 10,
yeah, right.
15 years, that's
15
later,
years
right.
later in almost 60.
And see, the message I try to get to my children and my mm-hmm. grandchildren is that if they start at 20 doing what we are doing now, and then they accumulate wealth for 40 years, they could easily be millionaires, you know, and then their whole life would be a whole lot better when you're not dealing with the financial uncertainty that comes with life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we have two of them on this program tonight, and we're looking at one of them, so we're going to hear from her.
Okay.
And I think that it is possible, and we are changing lives with this program. We're changing generational lives with this program. When families understand that we can do more than have Sunday dinner, we can do more than just go to church and pray and praise, we have to learn to invest.
Mm-hmm.
So excited, Naomi.
Thank you, Carl. So let's shift over to Tiffany, who I don't know, Tiffany, if you're the youngest one outside of your child that's in the investment club.
No, I'm not. Actually, Howard's sons are the youngest. They're right
okay.
behind me.
Okay. And how old are they? Do you know?
So I'm 43.
Okay.
So I guess Howard, David
is 39, and Eric is 31.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
I only, Eric graduated from Howard University Law School about 5 years ago.
Okay, very, very nice.
I saw your banner hanging in the background.
Oh, yeah, always. So, Tiffany, you know, with your mom being the... the guiding light. The funny thing is,
yeah.
as I'm about to say this, I'm like, oh, man, this is a lot like my mom, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, being the one that a lot of people look to and,
mm-hmm.
and she's showing the family the way and being that kind of first example.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she also talked about how she brought you along to
mm-hmm.
Coffee Fest and the National Convention of Better Investing. Walk us through your beginnings of
mm-hmm.
being exposed to this investment education early, and if
mm-hmm.
you kind of stayed with it, if you did a little bit just enough to
yeah.
take advantage and then kind of come back, what was your trajectory like?
So my early memories are probably very similar to yours with, you know, going to the conferences with your mom. So yes, I went to the conferences, I went to the workshop. I would actually, you know, the meetings that they would have in the homes, in each other's homes, I would be doing homework while they're having, you know, their meetings, their club meetings. And so I went through the phases of learning from a, you know, the youth in perspective. We started, a youth activity at my church at the time. So I was probably in high school and then in college, but it was also about my maturity. You know, I wasn't ready to embrace it, definitely at the level, you know, as my mom was gaining her level of experience and competency with investing and learning, and, you know, she was passing that down to me. So I think I picked up some things early, you know, when I was in grad school. And, you know, I had extra money, I would give it to her and ask her to buy my, you know, could you get this stock for me, or could you do this and do that for me? And so that was a start, but what she wanted me to do is have the capability to do that for myself and not necessarily just to rely on her, because then what happened was, I'll never forget, I gave her $500 to buy Hawaiian Electric. And so I was following it, and then, you know, life and just being young and it was important, but I also had this comfort and security because it was my mom, you know, and she was going to take care of me. And she wasn't going to let anything happen to, because $500 was a big deal for me, you know, in grad
school. That's a lot of money.
No. Yes, in grad school. So, but what happened was she ended up making some decisions and sold it and did a whole bunch, some other things. And I'm looking at her like, what happened? And, you know, and so that was the lesson about this is why you learn for yourself. You know, she did take care of me, don't get me wrong, but she also was trying to teach me this lesson about you don't let anyone else count your money for you. You know, you follow your own investments. You understand what you are investing in and, you know, not just relying upon other people to tell you that. There is a lot of, you know, financial educators out here, and they have, you know, very helpful and insightful information, but you have to, you know, empower yourself. So, you know, we grew up with a matriarch who was very strong-willed and worked very hard. And so, you know, what she taught my mom and what my mom also, I feel like, taught me, but she was trying to transition from this mode of survival, you know, the circumstances of growing up, you know, in the 60s and earlier eras required that they didn't get to learn about financial literacy and have tools and have options around financial education. So it was more about surviving. And my mom was trying to transition me from just surviving to learning how to be to sustaining. And so that's kind of my story went into, you know, that's kind of how my story was for a while. Was I was investing, but just, you know, at the cusp of it. I was intimidated as well. My background is in public health and psychology, and so numbers and, you know, doing the statistics of things, that wasn't necessarily my interest. And so I think that was part of the intimidation around pursuing investment, is that I had to have this very keen financial acumen. But what I've learned as I've gotten older, that now that I'm also someone's mother and, you know, someone's wife, that it is about generativity. It is about, you know, this generational wealth and understanding that when, you know, so much of our, so, you know, what we see is about obtaining possession, you know, that wealth is characterized by the things you can possess and own and buy. And so it actually, I remember a joke from Chris Rock. He made this analogy about the difference between being rich and being wealthy. And he said, you know, he's rich, but the difference about being wealthy is when you can invent the color blue. It's something that, you know, will sustain you for, you know, everybody needs it, you know, and it you can pass it down from generation to generation to generation. And so that's kind of, you know, I think when we talked about the name for the club, that's why it was so important to us, that it was about generativity and building wealth and really understanding that wealth is more about freedom, you know, in terms of your freedom, not just to, I think the buying the goods and services, that's a byproduct of having money. But wealth allows you a freedom where you don't have to worry about certain things, but it requires that you put the work and the investment and the education into it. And so I will say in my journey, I'm still, when it comes to, you know, we look at our group, I'm still not probably where my mom wants me to be in terms of how active I am. I think one of the things that I feel like I didn't go into our family investment club as my only source of investing, but to also that it gave me tools and education to do outside of investing. So that's something that has helped me a lot from being a part of Wealth Builders. And I, you know, didn't go into it because I think I joined Wealth Builders at such a, you know, later age in my life. And I think my daughter was probably one at the time. So I went into it with that eye of wealth building and not just to get rich quick kind of scheme, but still recognizing it takes, even, you know, over the 8 years that we've been involved with the club, it still takes this commitment. And sometimes that commitment seems intimidating, you know.
Ah, I like how you said that. Sometimes the commitment seems intimidating. Just real quick, based on that, what do you think you would lose if you made the commitment? What would you have to give up?
You know, it's one more thing, but, you know, you think about the other things that you spend time, you know, doing, you can do it. So you just have to, you know, sometimes prioritize. And
sure.
And
do you think that it would be helpful if, let's say, you had a partner within the club to say, hey, let's meet, let's do SSG, or let's meet and let's work on this?
Yeah, I do feel like, and I think Howard said that earlier, like I am more quiet in terms of our group dynamics. You know, if I'm assigned something, I do what I'm assigned. I do sit back and I try to listen and I observe. But when we started, it was more of the younger generation, you know, my cousins, because they actually, again, I was a new mom. So I was like, I don't have time for this, you know. but they asked me to participate and, like, let's do this. And I got in. And so I was hoping that we would do that. So, you know, I'm able to kind of do that with David and Eric, you know, especially with David. But I probably could do that more. But my mom and Howard and Carl, they do that. Like, they're definitely a sounding board for each other. And so it would be good if, you know, if the younger generational, the younger generations within our group, if we kind of had that dynamic more so. But we bounce things off of them all the time. And it is, they're such a great resource to have in our club. But
wow.
I think the idea, and I know how it probably, the idea was that we would take this over at some point, meaning the younger generations. And we're not quite there yet. I don't know if Howard would weigh in on that, or my mom.
I think they're willing to be patient. I mean, if the club's only like 6 years old,
yeah.
So that's still young.
Yeah.
They're a lot further than they think they are. They are the officers of the club. Howard and I do not hold any offices. but we're there to mentor and to help them. For example, as I indicated, Jamal, who is the third brother, he's the president now. His son is the treasurer. So Eric, the youngest son. And Tiffany has been president. Carl has been president. So we've moved that responsibility around to help groom them into not only, you know, to be leaders.
Yeah. And I've done the treasurer role as well.
Wow. That's big stuff, Tiffany.
Yeah.
So the other question I really want to ask is, you know, we're talking about family. So they are already, I guess, at least to my mind, I'm gonna put out there, especially Black families. You know, you probably a spectrum, but in my mind, there's only one or two. Right? There is the family that does not talk about money,
mm-hmm.
and the family that you all probably fall under, which is there is trust there. You know, we all know people that. You know, what's that saying? If you wanna run somebody off, lend them some money. You know, so when you have that type of potential family dynamics within family members or within your family system, one, how do you rise above that? You know, to first of all, you all are pulling real money together mm-hmm. as a family. And this isn't just a nuclear family. This is cousins,
mm-hmm.
you know, grandma, mom, granddaughter, you know, intergenerational and extended family all kind of grouped together. So the one question is, how do you build trust and navigate, you know, trust within family relationships? The other question, too, is how are you getting members? You know, in the sense of Do you just let family members say they're interested and take them, or are you kind of like, you know, reeling some in? Because, you know, I mean, I have my own notions of how I would do things, but, you know, I mean, to be a Black family investment club in existence 6 years, yes, you all are anchored to Better Investing, but there are still some family dynamics, like Carl mentioned. Like, you know, he was, I thought Carl was like 40-something. He was like, I still didn't want to do it, you know. But and it takes a long time sometimes for some of us to make the decision that this is the route that we want to take.
I would just say, go ahead, Mom.
Well, my take on it is, first, that money will always bring issues in a Black family. No, just to put it delicately, it will always cause a problem. I think the trust came in. We did follow the BI guidelines in setting up an operating structure with, you know, rules and regulations. And we really held everybody's feet to the fire. We did not make any decisions based on because I'm the mother or, you know, a car needed money to get new tires for his car or whatever. If he wanted to withdraw money, there were penalties that he had to pay, and it had to specify in the bylaws that he could withdraw money. We had a time frame when money could be withdrawn without penalty based on years being active. At first, it was sort of difficult to get people to, it's always that concept of paying something on a regular basis. Now, you're going to pay your house note or your car note always on time, but something like a family club where, you know, and all the only thing we were asking was $25. Now, my take on, and they'll tell you, I'm the one, I don't play when it comes to money. My thing is, okay, if you can buy Coca-Cola, you know, at $2 a can, if you can buy chocolate bars at $1.50 at the gas station, and that's how I got involved in Better Invest. Just to take you back to how I got involved, there was a newscaster named Charles Ross, a Black newscaster here in Atlanta, who was a financial advisor, more or less. And every morning at 7:35, he would come on the radio station while I was en route to work and give a five-minute blurb about investing. He announced one morning that there was going to be a start of an investment club. At that time, Tiffany was in high school, and I'm a single mom struggling and, okay, and I'm thinking I'm retiring. I work for a Fortune 500 company, but I did not see any Fortune 500 coming my way. So I decided, and that's when I asked Howard to go with me. I wanted to go and see what it was all about. So that's how I started. I was, like I said, Tiffany was in high school. I was already close to 50 years old at the time. I am the oldest in the club. So I started with putting $25 a month, and you can still do that. The same amount of money will build you extraordinary wealth, compound annual return. So, but anyway, to go back to your question, money was the problem. Half of them didn't want to pay the dues. Other half paid dues, and the animosity between I'm paying my dues every month and you're not paying your dues, and so it happens. But the key is you've got to stay focused on what you're trying to do and accomplish and keep that in the forefront. Forget about that, and sure enough, it all comes into play now. I mean, we work a lot better. Everybody pays dues on a timely manner. But the key is they understand we're putting that little $25 a month into this club. And they've already seen what the portfolio has done by making wise decisions. So, you know, we stay on call about smoking. You know, it's not good for his health and all that. Stop paying $5 a pack for cigarettes. Make yourself healthy and make yourself rich with $5 every week, if you put $5 in every week, guess what? You got $25 to buy at least one share or partial share of stock. That's all it takes. You can minimize the impact. People want to think you got to have $1 million to invest. The only thing I did not want to be rich. The only thing I knew in working for a Fortune 500 company, and that was during the time downsizing was 1 month, upsizing was the next month, next year it was right sizing. So I'm thinking, what's going to be for me when I leave this company? So that's what I had to do. I had to think. All I wanted to do was sustain a lifestyle that I had become accustomed to. I retired almost 15 years ago. I still do international travel. That was my goal. I want to eat. I want to go to a play every now and then. I want to have a steak dinner when I want to.
Yeah.
And that goes back to what Tiffany was saying. That is what wealth is about for me. Just being what I want, when I want to, and I don't have to worry about, okay, and I taught this to her. Do you buy a new pair of shoes, or do you pay your rent on time? Or, you know, can you take a trip or vacation or buy you a new car? You know, you make those decisions on what's the priority.
Excellent. And, yeah, go ahead, Tiffany, because I definitely wanted to hear what you had.
I would also just add, just, you know, from the perspective of being the young, you know, the younger folks in the group, we started off large. I think when we first started, we were well over 30-plus people. And I think what my mom just mentioned, having the tools of the framework from BI, you know, I don't think we realized how serious it was, but it was helpful to have a structure that was organized that gave us a platform or a way to conduct the business. Because I think if we didn't have that, then it probably would have, you know, been a mess.
And disorganized,
and especially with money, and what you were asking in your question about trust. And I think because we were using the DI framework versus Cynthia's framework or Howard's framework of how to run it, that's where we were, you know, they still, you know, inserted their opinions about how things should go and run.
Right.
But we
right.
had an order of business that we could follow
that third party.
Yeah, and I think that's what helped a lot. And I also think that when we got into this, we did, you know, think it was going to be more social than what it was. And we thought it's business. I mean, we have our social moments and parts of it,
right.
and our get-togethers and all of that. But this was, I realized, and I think my cousins were the same way, like, this was serious. This was real business, learning these SSGs. The educational segments that we have to do, you know, it's an investment of our, like I said earlier, of our time. And so that's where I think maybe that trust has been built. And so, like Lon said, the club itself, of course, has gotten smaller, but it's stronger, I think, in a lot of ways, because we've made these connections and it's so.
Now, Tiffany, let me ask you this, because you make a, and I'm going to get to you, Howard. You make a really good point. Our model club recently went through a downsizing period, just our last meeting, because of what Cynthia raised. People didn't want to pay their money by the deadline, and they showed up to the meeting and didn't think that there was a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And so how long did it take your family club, Wealth Builders Group, to go through its attrition from 30 to, you know, maybe, I'm sure it had a stopping point somewhere in the middle, because right now y'all are at 11, 6 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your first kind of downsizing or mm-hmm. whatever, shedding, whatever you want to call it, how long did it take?
I think the first 2 years or two, we were strong with the, like, in terms of the size. But probably by that second year or third year, we saw more and more folks, you know, dropping off. The other thing is that we started trying to amend or adjust our bylaws in some way. So, you know, I think, I don't know who mentioned it earlier in the discussion, but we have an active versus passive participation. We allow that.
Right.
So that
family members could still contribute, but may not necessarily, you know, want to participate in the educational components of it, but they still have to give their dues, but they have no decision making in terms of, you know, when we decide to buy and sell and so forth. And so I think that, you know, allowed more flexibility, but that's kind of, you know, how things have been now for at least the last 2, maybe 3 years, definitely the last 2 years, and how it could probably tell you, you know, give some more details in that. But yeah, we went, you know, here and then, you know, and it's like now I feel like we've plateaued. We're in this, you know, pretty good phase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How
manageable.
Manageable. I like that.
Yeah, I wanted to respond to the issues that you raised. I think trust was never an issue with our clinic.
Yeah.
This is a close-knit family. You know, I've got two brothers who are members, and we are very close. Cynthia and I are cousins, and we've been close since we were preteen. So I think trust has never been an issue. I remember when Tiffany was born and has been in her life ever since she was born.
Yeah.
And, you know, both of my brothers' children, you know, I've been with them forever. I think the trust issue has never been a problem. Now, that's probably not the case with all families. Now, on the other hand, with the structure of Better Investing and the bylaws, my cousin Cynthia and I love her to death, we had knockdown dragouts because, like Cynthia said, when we're dealing with money, she don't play. So our conflict was she wanted a strict interpretation of things,
mm-hmm.
and my viewpoint was that this is a family club. We don't have to be that strict. I agree. Now, if it hadn't been a family club, Cynthia and I had been in clubs before, and I agreed under those circumstances, but I had to fight, try to coordinate with her and convince her to lighten up a little bit.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
Pay
her off.
If you know, you're a day late putting your dues in the bank account, you are not to incur a $10 fine. That's 40% of the club dues if you putting in $25.
I'm with you, Miss Cynthia.
That's a stiff penalty. I'll go down the same line with you, Alan. But that was our thing. And we started out with a little over maybe the 20. I don't think it was as many as Tiffany thought.
Uh-huh. But
My mother-in-law is the only one who has really, I take that back. My mother-in-law and Jamal's oldest son are the only two that have withdrawn from the club. We got those 11 active members, and then I think it's the 5 or 6 inactive that are still there.
But y'all haven't come down that much from 22 to about...
No, not that much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And I think it was those that first year where we went through those growing pains and this and that and how we were going to put our routine in order. And then I think in those middle years, we got our act together and we started rolling, mm-hmm. and the portfolio started performing, and I think that brought a lot of people more in line, and they saw what we were talking about, and they started buying in. You know, you have to have that buy-in period. And then after that, I think we did a whole lot better with people doing their assignments and making their contributions on time and actually participating. And now we have robust conversations with most of the members when we bring in a new company to introduce. Or if we talk about selling off a company or something like that, we had a very heated discussion a couple of months ago when we broached the subject of taking some profits off the table, not divesting ourselves of the entire position in the company, but some of that where we had made a profit and using some of that money to buy new stock. So I just wanted to let everybody know that it hadn't been all wine and roses, but we have survived. And I think that's a testament to the initial trust level in the family. Because, you know, this is one of those families where we communicate on a regular basis.
And that's outside of investing.
Right. Yeah, I think that's fundamental, and I'm so glad you raised that, Howard, because, like, you know, like I said, you have the Black families that are already in communication, so I think a family investment club is a good fit for those that want to, you know, take their financial education, investment education to the next level. But then you have some other, you know, Black families that you don't even really communicate. So to try to force the issue and be like, well, we should be doing this, you know, that may not be, you know, the best thing. You kind of have to already have that foundation. And I would, you know, I just say I come from the latter family. So I think that, you know, for the people that do come from the latter family where you are not in close communication with whether it be your nucleus family or your extended family, you know, you can definitely be a part of the Better Investing family. You know, you can join the model club there. You can come to the chapter meetings. You can join the online club. You can definitely be a part of a group of like-minded people, you know, warm-hearted, spirited people that want to, you know, continue their investment education and also want to see you succeed financially and your whole well-being. So that's really my words of encouragement to anybody listening. You know, we're so happy to have the Wealth Builders Group, which is a family invest club out of Georgia, and with some members across the nation. But if you are thinking about a family investment club, you know, you can definitely reach out to this club. They are members of the Better Investing Georgia chapter. So if you go to betterinvesting.org and find the Georgia chapter and send an email to the Georgia chapter, you know, you can get some support in starting an investment club for your family if that's what you want. And you can reach out to Better Investing Home Office for information on becoming a member of Better Investing and starting whether it be a family investment club or just a general investment club. With that being said, I do want to give, you know, way to call Tiffany, Cynthia, and Howard. Just for some closing remarks, any last words of, especially in regards to, let's say, for example, and yeah, definitely you first call, but let's say, for example, there are some people that Tiffany's age, you know, they found Better Investing and they want to share it with their parents. Then you have, you know, people like Miss Cynthia or Howard that joined Better Investing, or really I should say call joined Better Investing, and then now they want to share it with their kids. So speak to both sides as we wrap up. You know, how would you encourage either from child to parent or parent to child to learn about Better Investing and continue the journey?
Before Carl speaks, Carl, I want you to mention what you're doing with Jaya. And also, at our December meeting, one of Carl's adult grandsons will more than likely be joining the club, too. He just moved back to the Atlanta area.
Wow.
And we had a gathering a little about a month or so ago, and we got to talking about his destiny. And I sent him information, a copy of the club bylaws, and he's very interested. So he has already registered to attend our meeting in December. We've gone to an every other month meeting schedule, and he's already signed up to join the website.
Excellent.
What I want to say that it's never too late. Like I said earlier, I was 58 or 59 before I got started. And it's better late than never, you know, because I'm financially situated now that, you know, 8, 9 years later, like I never have been before in my life. So it's never too late. And I do encourage everyone to start. The earlier you start, the wealthier you'll become. But one thing I do want to stress is that this is our chapter is an educational investment club.
Yeah. So
this is not what you just put money in. By educational, I mean we have classes. We have assignments we have to do. We do the SSGs. It's a lot of work involved. It's not like you're going to come in and get rich and let somebody else do the work. Everyone has an assignment they have to do. And the educational process is ongoing. And then it's like the more education you get, the more you want. And as far as my granddaughter, I started a college savings fund. I invest money through TD Ameritrade for her college education. And what I try to do is when I do every month, I try to invest in certain stocks that we usually discuss in our club meeting. And she just turned 10 yesterday, which was her 10th birthday yesterday. I try to go to her some of the basic concepts. They might be over her head, but I'm planting the seed for her to say that I need to save money. I also give her money. You know how grandparents or pop-poppers are. They always give their granddaughter all the money.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm telling her, not only I'm doing this, but what are you doing with the money? Like Tiffany said earlier, what are you doing with this money that I'm giving you? Not to go buy a watch with, but you got to save it and start investing it too. So it's an ongoing process, but don't even think it's an easy way to be involved in an investment club. It's a lot of work, but it's very beneficial too. Very beneficial.
Yeah, and I echo that, you know, it's never too late and it's never too early. You know, my daughter now, you know, given who her grandmother is, but she definitely gets the things that she likes for Christmas, you know, or birthday toys and stuff. But she has socks. Her first birthday.
She's seven, right?
She's seven. And for her first birthday, she got a Disney sock. So I think those are some of the things that we can do for ourselves and within our families is to kind of diversify ourselves with what we, you know, what we see as a gift, you know, to our families and to our loved ones. So, and it just, and I think the intimidation thing for the young people to hear that it's not about you having to come in with this, you know, this degree of knowledge.
I know all the answers.
And knowing answers and all that, but, you know, you just find where your level is and start somewhere and keep in learning and you'll figure out where your path is along the way and just keep with it.
Excellent.
Okay, I guess I'm closing out. Just want to just reiterate, I'm just one for education and outreach. I'm the one through the chapter and the club. I go to high schools. I go to the NAACP youth empowerment sessions and talk to these young people. And one of the key things in bringing young people, our grandkids and our children into better investing, you don't have to talk to them about, you know, a big company stock. Think about things that they like, the type of shoes they like or T-shirts they like or the games they like, tail and things like that. Associate that with trying to teach them, don't just buy these products. Become a shareholder.
Hold
it. It's just like going to the stock market, is going to the grocery store. What cereal do you like? Do you like Pebbles? Do you like Cheerios? Of course. Whatever you buy, you're giving them money. But you can take And that money and become 50 shares of stock and buy or become a shareholder. And you can help make the decisions about that confidence. But you also can build your portfolio to be inclusive of just different things that you like. And that's for adults as well. So it's, as everybody said, it's never too late. I brought Howard in after he got to be 100 years old. So, you know, and keep talking. That's the thing. Don't give up. Just keep talking. And then the curiosity was set in. Let me see why you keep doing this. As Carr said, why was he keep going to these meetings and things like that? So show by example and always know somebody is listening, and don't worry about the numbers. If you get one person, that one person becomes two, that two become the same thing as compound interest.
Wow. Thank you, Miss Cynthia.
Oh, I thought we were two. I thought you were closing out.
He did say the benediction with that thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let the church
Amen.
Say. Let the church
Amen.
Say.
But like I said, I think, you know, they've heard my story before. So just be encouraged. And Cynthia and I are available to help anybody who wants to start a club. If you don't want to contact the chapter that's in your area, you can go on to Better Investing and look for the chapter nearest you if you're not comfortable with that. I have a go-to-meeting license, and I'm learning how to use Zoom, and the internet goes everywhere. So no matter where you are, we can reach out and assist. So you've been offered assistance, and it's up to you to take it.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Ione Howard if you're willing to give your contact information, if it's an email or something. I know Ione mentioned earlier about going to the website, but that might be another way we can put on the air some kind of way.
We're going to put it in the show notes, too. So.
Okay, but I just want to also make sure, though, because what happens oftentimes, people hear this recording, but they don't get to see the comments or the chat. So if there's an email or a number or something you'd like to share for the chapter, like Ione shared, or something exactly where they can connect.
Ione, you have my email, right? Do you want me to give it over the air now, Ione?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Okay. My email is hlj51@comcast.net. hlj51.net.
Okay, and we'll put that on, like I understand, on the chat.
Okay. You want me to type mine in or just give it to you?
Yes, please. Yes, you can repeat it too. The first one was Howard Johnson, and now Cynthia McCrary is going to give her contact. Go ahead, Cynthia.
I put it in the chat, and mine is mccr102@bellsouth.net. That's mccr102@bellsouth.net.
Check the chat again.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Don't have my glasses on.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Okay, Ione.
Go ahead.
All right, so we just want to thank everybody for joining us, and we want to mention to those of you that came on a little later, Ione McNeil and myself, and you know, we're volunteers with Better Investing. And actually, Ione is a little bit more than a volunteer, but that's another show for another day. She's actually our vice president of our chapter and also on the national board for this phenomenal organization. But our mission at Better Investing, as a not-for-profit organization, our mission is to educate individual investors and investment clubs to become successful, lifelong investors. The organization, again, was founded in 1951 as the National Association of Investment Clubs, better known now as Better Investing. And it has helped over 5 million people from all walks of life learn how to improve their financial future. The association was born of the conviction that anyone can become a successful lifelong stock investor by following sound, practical investing principles. And the four proven principles and time-tested approach that we provide is unbiased stock investing classes, effective online stock selection and analysis tools, and exclusive investor publication and other resources. Our investing principles are: invest a set amount of money regularly, reinvest all dividends, only buy quality stocks at a reasonable price, and diversify your holdings to minimize your risk. Again, my name is Ann McNeil, and I am very excited to share with Ione one of our first investment clubs on this program titled Hashtag My Investing Story. So with all minds and hearts are clear, Ione, we can go ahead and give everybody a thank you so very much for joining, and we will see everybody back here again next week. And Ione, before we wrap up, I got to ask you the question if you had a shout-out for anybody.
No shout-out.
Okay, no shout-out. You got to come next week for the shout-out. All right, so everybody have a good evening, and we will see
thank you.
And I want to thank you and Ione for putting this program together. It is an outstanding outreach effort on the behalf of two great ladies, and I just want to thank y'all for the effort that y'all put into this and your goal of reaching out to people and spreading the word. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. Thank you, Howard. And to anybody listening, please tell a friend, have them join you. We're going to have an exciting guest next week. I won't tell you who it is, but definitely look out for who's next.
All right. And we also want to thank Bob Wynn for joining. Go ahead, Cynthia.
Oh, no, Tiffany.
Oh, Tiffany, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tiffany.
No, I didn't have anything.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. We just want to thank everybody again, like Ione said. And please like, comment, and share this show. Okay? Please like, comment, and share the show, because we really want to make a difference in this financial empowerment and an education opportunity for all. All right, and with that, we're going to say good night, and we will see you all next week. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Goodbye.